Growing up in a fundamental religious environment can affect people very, very differently. Some embrace the religious indoctrination, while others rebel in very extreme ways. My guest today grew up in the Shiny Happy People cult and experienced a pretty dramatic departure from her strict upbringing later in life. Oceana, welcome and thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
I'm great. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited to hear about your story. I know you have experienced a lot, but I wanted to start with kind of hearing about your childhood in the Shiny Happy People cult. I think we kind of had similar experiences. One major difference is that you were actually born into the Shiny Happy People cult. So you didn't really know anything else growing up, right?
Yeah, exactly. So exactly like you said, I was born into this cult. I'm one of seven kids, and there's three that are older than me, three that are younger. And so my parents, I think, initially put my oldest two, maybe three siblings in public school. I think it was like preschool or kindergarten. And then somehow, I have no idea how, they came across ATI, which was the homeschool curriculum that Bill Gothard, the founder of the Shiny Happy People cult, he created that. So they came across that somehow, and I guess decided they wanted to be a part of that. And so then they pulled my other older siblings out of public school and then started homeschooling them. By the time I came along, they were homeschooling in it. So yeah, it's all I've ever known. I've never spent a day in my life in public school. I'm so curious what that's like.
I know, right? Yeah,
that's all I know.
Yeah, I never went to public school either, or private school for that matter. My family didn't join the Shiny Happy People cult until I was like 12 or 13, maybe. But yeah, I was homeschooled all the way through high school as well. Being right there smack dab in the middle of all your siblings, I mean, you must have like the most intense middle child syndrome. How's that?
You would think. It was kind of interesting though, because some cult father that my dad knew a long time ago, he actually had told him that the middle kids are the ones that are always forgotten. And so they're the ones who get into trouble and rebel the most. So instead of being kind of the forgotten middle child, instead I had like a laser focus on me. So Yeah, that was an interesting experience as well, to say the least.
So you weren't getting away with anything like most middle children.
No, definitely not. My parents were, I mean, they were very strict, a little bit controlling at the time. They've gotten better, I think, as they've got older and a little more progressive. But at the time, just very, very strict, monitored everything. They were checking our internet history. They had passwords to our Facebooks, everything. Like, everything was so tightly controlled. We had to ask permission for literally everything. So definitely very sheltered, very controlled.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty common for people that grew up in the Shiny Happy People cult, that control and isolation. It's so interesting, and we've talked about this before on other episodes. Everyone's experience in this cult is so different because it's like each family has their own little miniature version of the cult at home, right? So, you know, some people experience just like really extreme abuse. Other families, it was kind of relaxed and chill. As relaxed and chill as a cult can be, I guess.
Right.
what kind of experience did you have? Were your parents like signed into or bought into the whole Michael and Debbie Pearl thing, or were they a little bit more chill about that kind of stuff?
So I feel like we kind of fell sort of in the middle of the spectrum. For example, we weren't quite as extreme as the Duggars, for instance. The Duggars are very extreme. They're very, very strict. But we were close to that. Growing up when I was younger, I think every year we went to the yearly conference that the cult held in Knoxville, Tennessee. And then as we got older, we didn't go as often. I'm not sure why. I don't know if it was like a financial issue or if my parents just didn't feel the need to go. But we followed the cult's rules and their teachings pretty closely, sometimes more so than other times. For example, like my parents would let us girls wear like pants and shorts, but only at home. If we went in public, then we had to put on the long dress or the long skirt. And then at times they would kind of crack down on us and say, okay, we know that we've kind of been more lenient in this area and let you wear pants at home. But now during school hours, for example, you have to wear a skirt and you can't take it off till like 3 p.m. or something like that. But with a lot.
But you were homeschooled. You were homeschooled. And so it was like, got to wear the pants at home. Or no, you had to wear the dresses during school hours, almost like a uniform.
Yeah, I think my parents had to sign something saying, like, we promise we'll wear skirts during school hours. So then I think they felt bad that they were letting, like, being so lenient and then cracked down on us a little bit. So, but we definitely resisted against all of their rules. So it definitely wasn't easy for them to enforce the rules.
You know what? That's interesting. I've heard of, like, the family counselors or whatever, like making these impromptu visits to, you know, cult members' houses just to check in and make sure that they were following all the rules. So I wonder if there was a situation like that with your parents. I've heard, I never even knew about that growing up, but apparently it was like a really common thing in the Shiny Happy People cult.
Yeah, I never heard of it either. And to my knowledge, I don't think anyone like that ever came to our house that I know of. But yeah, I was shocked when I heard that too. Shocked, but also not surprised. Like,
yeah,
just like the cult.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, they had the families that were in the cult, they had a high level of control over the kids, even the dad over the mom. But the cult maintained this extreme control as well. So it all just kind of trickled down.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of that umbrella teaching, I think, kind of where, like, you know, the father's ahead of everything. And of course, he submits to like Bill Gothard and God and government officials and whatever. But yeah, it's very, definitely very misogynistic in that the fathers have all the power, all the control, whatever they say goes, they get the last word. They're not like the father and the mother, they're not an equal team. So yeah, definitely an imbalance there for sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Big time. You know, so your parents were semi-relaxed with some of the rules, at least in terms of like what you were allowed to wear and not allowed to wear. What about like the dating experience for y'all? Did you have to do the courtship thing? Was that enforced at home?
Yes, absolutely. So they wanted us to do courtship. They even bought some books. They probably found them, I think, at the cult conferences to kind of encourage us. They were written by, I think, other cult members, just like these fictional stories. One was called The Courtship of Jeff McLean. And there was A Courtship of Sarah McLean and Waiting for Her Isaac. So they had us read those books. They had us read I Kissed Dating Goodbye as well, of course. So we were supposed to do courtship. And my oldest brother and my oldest sister, they did courtship. They adhered to the rules. But then from my next oldest brother down, all the rest of us kids, we did not do courtship. Some of us were sneaking around with boys behind my parents' backs. So my parents, I think they finally realized that they couldn't control us and they couldn't really enforce the rules. We were kind of going to do what we wanted to do anyways. And so I think their next best alternative in their minds was, well, at least let's know what's going on. Let's have everything out in the open. So then dating was kind of okay. I met my first boyfriend in college. I was lucky enough that my parents weren't so strict at that point. There was a point in time where I didn't think I would be allowed to go to college, but they did finally let me go to college, albeit a Christian college that they picked. But that's where I met my first boyfriend. And yeah, we were dating. We were engaged at one point, but then that didn't work out. And my story took a whole different turn later down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely want to get into that, like how drastically your life changed, later on. What do you think kind of precipitated your family's departure from the Shiny Happy People cult?
Yeah. So it was very gradual. I think when my parents first started to kind of see the cracks in the facade, so to speak, I think was when my oldest brother went to college. He went to the cult college. It was called Verity something or other, probably Verity Institute. So he went there, and without getting into like his story or anything, because I don't have his permission to share that. But he went through some things there that my parents didn't agree with. And when we were going to his graduation, I remember Bill Gothard actually called my dad and told him, like, when you come here for this graduation, like, this is how you are to conduct yourself and this is how you are to handle this situation. And then after that phone call, my dad sat us all down in a big family meeting. He told us what was going on, that he'd just been on the phone with Bill Gothard. And he said, you know, this is what Bill Gothard said we're going to do. And we are not going to do that. We're going to go and just act normal like we would have originally. So that's what we did do. As far as I know, nothing came of that. There was like no drama or nothing bad happened that I know of. But I think that was the very, very beginning. And then years later, my younger sister went to Journey to the Heart, and it was there that she had her one-on-one with Bill Gothard. And he wanted her to come live and work for him at headquarters. So he had her in his office, and he called my dad and was like, hey, you know, she's here sitting with me. She wants to come live here and work for me, and I'd like to have her. And my dad, I think the alarm bells went off. I think something in him luckily could sense that something was off. It didn't feel right. So he was like, no, that's not happening. No way. So then he sent my mom and my other sister to go get her and bring her home. And I think it was shortly after that event that we left. I don't know any of the details because my parents have never disclosed them. We've never talked about it. And my parents are just, when I do try to talk about growing up in the cult, or even when I ask them directly, did we grow up in a cult, they to this day will deny it. And yeah, they're very vague and evasive. It's very hard to get straight answers out of them.
That's interesting. So they had these kind of negative experiences with two of your siblings. But even after that, they don't want to admit like this was a mistake. This was a cult, or at least a high control group. They just prefer to avoid it altogether.
Yeah. My family isn't good at confrontation. And I feel like just after being in therapy and going to school for psychology, like when I kind of psychoanalyze the situation and my parents, I feel like if I was in their shoes, it's probably too painful to admit that they raised us in a cult and then to have to face that pain of hurting their children, because they didn't do it intentionally. They had the best intentions. They were literally just trying to make our lives better and give us what they never had. So I don't think that, yeah, I don't judge them. I don't blame them. I am hurt by them, but I understand where they're coming from, I feel like. So, yeah.
Have they ever apologized for any aspects of how they raised y'all?
Some things, because I did a couple years back now, I think I did sit them down on FaceTime. We had like a 2-hour conversation. I had a whole list of written questions. I literally was going through everything, like, why this? Like, why did you raise us like this? Why did you do this? And specific examples and everything. And so, you know, they did cry and they apologized for some things, to their credit, but a lot of it I didn't feel like they could take responsibility for. So maybe someday.
Yeah, it's so interesting because once again, everyone's experience is a little bit different here, right? For me, my parents apologized profusely after the fact.
That's good.
And that's amazing. We were able to repair the relationships and still have, you know, an amazing family dynamic to this day. But then again, you know, my co-host Bryce, very, very different. Where it was just denial and deflection and blaming on his parents' part. And so it's just, it's so tough to see that not everyone can look back at this shiny, happy people cult experience and say, yeah, that was not good. And the fact that the cult even still exists today is just kind of mind-blowing after everything that happened.
Yeah, it really is. Mind-blowing and frustrating for sure.
Incredibly. What years was your family in the cult? Do you know, Oceana?
I'm not 100% for sure. The timeline is really fuzzy to me. A lot of this is really fuzzy, like even the memories, and like they sent me away for 3 months to one of the cult's programs. That's super fuzzy as well. But I think it was like from my birth up until, I want to say maybe a little before I went to college. So I was maybe around the age of 16 or 17 when we left, I think. Probably somewhere in there, I would guess.
Interesting. Okay. So this was like, they were there until the late 2010s, right?
Probably.
That's about where it would put it. So, I mean, everything broke loose and, you know, Bill Gothard was exposed as a predator and all that stuff. So they definitely probably separated before then. But I would definitely say y'all were, it sounds like y'all were participating in the cult as it was kind of, I don't want to say it was falling apart yet, but it was definitely slowing down at that point.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I remember when like everything came out and the stuff about Josh Duggar, like it was very validating in a sense, but also just like crazy to see. And I remember lots of people in the cult were saying like, oh, Josh Duggar, he's just a bad apple and he's the rare exception. And with regards to the cult, like, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I was just like, oh my God, there's nothing good about this though.
Right. That Josh Duggar is a product of the cult.
Yes.
That is 100%. The type of behavior that the cult encourages.
Yes.
I don't think it's a bad apple situation at all.
Not at all. Crazy. It's a breeding ground for predators, and it's so common for this type of stuff to be happening. It's so common for brothers to be doing things to sisters and for fathers to be doing things to their daughters. So, so common.
Oh yeah. I've heard just horror stories about this. It's really tough to talk about. But I've had several people reach out, that have watched some of the previous podcast episodes just to tell me about their experience. And I'm certainly not a therapist, so I have no idea how to handle that, but I really do hope that, you know, there's resources, for these folks. And Lindsay Williams has been on this podcast multiple times and talked about the resources that are available. I think that at a minimum therapy is absolutely needed. I heard you mention that you have gone to therapy, so that's great to hear. It is a difficult recovery process.
Yeah. I don't think you would be able to leave something like this without help. I think it's absolutely imperative that you get therapy, and especially someone who minimally is trauma informed, if not informed in dealing with people who come out of cults or high control groups.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. There are specifically trauma therapists out there. And I feel like if you've spent time in a cult or a high control group like this, those are absolutely the types of counselors or therapists you need to seek out. A lot of other people just aren't going to get it. And that's the fact of the matter. So you actually got sent away, you said, for 3 months to like a specialized program.
Yeah. I think it might've been commit, just based off the age I was at the time. I think it might've been some type of branch of commit or something like that. But it was this all girls program. It lasted for 3 months. I don't remember exactly where we were. I think it was probably the training center in either Michigan or Chicago. But it was just this, it was a ridiculous program where we were basically taught like how to be good wives, good mothers, how to fulfill our design, our God-given roles. We were in sessions all day, just like learning things about the Bible, learning more about the cult's teachings, just being indoctrinated essentially in a very, very controlled and very isolated and rigid environment.
So you were brainwashed for 3 months essentially, right?
Yeah. And they were teaching us ridiculous things too, like how to walk up and down a staircase like a lady. And we walked with books on our heads. Like it was crazy, the things they had us doing. Like when I think back on it.
Like etiquette training from the Renaissance period?
Yeah, basically.
Books on your head.
Yes. Wow. It was really ridiculous.
I went to one of those programs as well in Indianapolis, the compound in Indianapolis. We did not learn anything like that. They just worked us to the bone, tortured us a little bit, sent us to solitary confinement. What was your program, like a disciplinary type situation, or was this just extra training?
I think it was more extra training. I think it was for kids that were bad or troubled, because my mom made a point to like reassure me before I left, like, we're not sending you away because you're a bad kid. Like we think this is going to be a great, really fun experience for you. And then as soon as I got there, one of the other girls was all like, well, what are you in here for? And I was like, what am I in here for? I'm just here to like have a good experience. Like I'm not in here for anything. I didn't do anything bad. But then I started to kind of put it together. Like, oh, I think I'm being, I was sent away. Like, I think my parents mm-hmm. think I'm a really bad kid. Because at the time, you know, I had a really bad eating disorder and depression, anxiety. I was cutting myself, a lot of self-harm, stuff like that. So they were super concerned. Yeah, it was, yeah, very odd.
So this was basically their answer to a mental health crisis that you were having. Let's send her away to one of the cult compounds for 3 months. That's how we deal with that.
Yeah, because I think they were just completely at their wits' end. They didn't know how to deal with me, especially with like the self-harm and stuff like that. Because I mean, as you know, like therapy going to the outside world is strictly forbidden, very frowned upon right. in this culture. Yeah, like medication is not an option. It's pray it away. It's read your Bible mm-hmm. more or get sent away and further indoctrinated. Have your spirit broken, essentially.
Right.
It sounds kind of like that's what you went through. There was a lot of just like beating you down, beating you physically mm-hmm. into submission and beating you psychologically into submission as well.
Oh, yeah. I think that's what every problem child in the Shiny Happy People cult experienced. It was never, let's find solutions. Let's figure out why this is happening. Yeah. Let's understand it. It was just, well, you don't love God enough. And that's why this stuff is happening to you. And so you need to go figure out how to love God more so that you don't continue having these problems.
Yeah, because it's always about the victim, like the victim blaming in this culture. It's always, it's your fault. You have hidden sin. You're not godly enough, which is so sad.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. I mean, the 3 months that you were, you know, in this program, did you experience any of the punishments that the cult is famous for, like the prayer room lockups or, you know, the isolation that some of the other folks I've talked to have experienced?
No, I was super lucky in that I didn't experience any of that. But they were very harsh in other ways. For example, if you were late, you would be punished. And I was late one time by literally 1 minute because I was in the bathroom. But I got in trouble for that. I think they might've called it like detention. I'm not 100% sure. That might not be the word, but basically during free time, you had to stay in and like read these Bible verses and like write, mm-hmm. fill out this worksheet and write some stuff. Yeah. And I just remember feeling so shamed about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Guilt and shame were two of their primary disciplinary techniques for sure.
Yeah.
That and just outright abuse.
Yeah.
But if they couldn't actually physically abuse you with, you know, prayer room or interrogations or, you know, even corporal punishment, then yeah, a lot of times it was just making you feel like a horrible person for being 1 minute late to a group session. That's insane.
Yeah, it really is. Crazy.
So how old were you when you were in this program?
I think I might've been around the age of 16, I want to say, but again, I'm not for sure.
Okay.
I think it was right around when my oldest sister got married. So probably like, yeah, like 16, 17, maybe.
Oh, wow. So your older siblings got married while y'all were still in the cult?
Well, no, my sister had just gotten married because I just talked to her on the phone about this a few weeks back and she didn't remember it happening at all. So we were like talking about the timeline and we figured out like, oh, she had just gotten married. She was out of the house. So that's probably why she couldn't remember me being sent away.
Okay. I got you. Did she marry someone from the cult? Like you said that your older siblings did the courtship thing, right?
Yeah.
So did she marry another cult member?
No, he was homeschooled, you know, very okay. similar to us. But no, not in the cult, luckily.
I'm sure they probably met in church or something along those lines. Had a fun little religious arranged marriage, right?
Right. Yeah.
So 3 months, you get back home. I mean, did it change you at all? Did anything adjust when you got back from this program?
I just remember just being so grateful and so relieved to be at home. Like getting to go back home felt like the greatest gift, the biggest freedom in the world after being in this setting. Yeah, because I was so miserable. I remember like literally every single day crossing each day off and counting every single day down. Like how many more days, how many more weeks till I get to live or till I get to leave here because I was just so miserable and so unhappy. Yeah. And just not doing well, like with my physical health.
Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that these compounds that the Shiny Happy People cult ran, they were so controlling and so traumatizing that as bad as home life might have been, for some people, it was a relief to get back to that. Now, obviously, that's not the same for everyone. But in your case, obviously, it was just like, get me out of this compound. I'll take whatever I was dealing with at home over this.
Exactly. Yeah, they had us doing like free labor for them too and everything. Mm-hmm. So, which, yeah, that was common. I mean, you know.
that was like their favorite thing to do with these programs is we have the parents pay us exorbitant amounts of money to send their kids to our compounds. And then we just have free labor for as long as they're here. I mean, yeah. One of my teams, when I was in the Life Focus program, we were a big part of helping remodel a barn that they were using as part of their orphanage program. They had to buy the materials or probably have them donated, honestly. Completely free skilled labor. As long as they wanted.
From underage kids, no less. I don't know how old you were at the time, but I was definitely a minor working for free.
Yeah, I was 16 too. Yeah.
Okay.
I was 16 when I went.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm just basically a sweatshop.
Yeah.
That's part of the that's crazy. I didn't really think about that until just now. Yeah, I was underage at that point. I think I worked so much at home. I don't know if you had this experience too, Oceana. Like I worked, if I wasn't doing school, a lot of the times I was helping my dad or helping my mom around the house with projects. I learned all kinds of really practical skills, like construction, car repair. I don't do any of it now because I hated it so much at the time. I don't want to do it as an adult. But I don't know if you had kind of a similar experience at home.
I don't feel like my parents overworked us necessarily. We had like our daily chores. It was nothing like to the extreme though. My dad would get us up every Saturday to like help him outside with yard work. But again, yeah, I feel like to their credit, it wasn't anything crazy or extreme, you know, just the normal stuff. Luckily. Yeah.
Well, that must've been nice for you.
Yeah.
So you get back from your commit program and you think probably around 16 at this time. When did you graduate high school and actually get to go away to college?
I graduated on time and then went to college right after I graduated high school in the fall. Like I said, luckily I did get to have an education and I feel like I got a decent education. But again, it was a religious school. And so I was also wasting a lot of time learning things like Bible history that I just didn't need and did not care about. I think I also, as far as I know, have a minor, because I think everyone who graduated from that school also graduated with a minor in like biblical theology or biblical studies or something like that, like some BS degree that you don't need, never use. I think right around the time when I was in college, I really started to have more freedom and open my mind even further. Growing up, I would definitely try to like learn about the world and open up my mind as much as I could. I worked in a public library as my first job, which was another thing my parents did that was very like very opposite to what the cult would have wanted them to do. But I would like sneak books home and read them. I was learning about all these different religions. I was like really into Wicca and paganism and witchcraft. So I would be reading about that. And then in college, I had my own mailbox at school. So I realized, I can find these used books really cheap on Amazon about like witchcraft and Wicca, and I can buy them and have them sent to my school mailbox and no one will ever know. And this is how I can learn about the world. And also growing up when I worked at the library too, I was like reading books on like social skills and how to make friends, like things that when I look back on now, I'm so sad. But I was struggling
reading
so
a
much
book on
socially.
How to make friends.
Yeah, because I was so
that's
awkward
so sad,
shy.
But it's also so funny. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the isolation will do that to you. I mean, realistically, how else would you learn how to do that stuff aside from just practical experience? Yeah,
exactly.
And so you were reading all these books about witches and paganism and Wicca. I mean, that is the exact opposite from what we learned in the cult, right? Because I don't know if you remember this or if this was even, you know, part of your family dynamic, but like I wasn't allowed to listen to rock music, not even Christian rock music,
right? Which isn't
real rock music, but because the beat, the drums in the rock music would summon demons. And it was basically the same as practicing witchcraft, which I think if the cult had the ability, I think they still would have burned people at the stake that they thought could have been witches potentially, because they still believed in demon possession and all that stuff.
Wouldn't put it past them. They even believed that, like, did you ever hear about how like demons could be attached to objects? Like if we, like I was told, because I loved Hot Topic. So my parents were like, well, if you shop at Hot Topic and bring something home from there, there's a demon attached to it. You're bringing a demon into the house, which is silly and for superstitious.
What? A studded dog collar has a demon attached
literally.
To it? Yeah, I mean, it was ridiculous how literal the shiny, happy people cult took demon possession and witchcraft and all this stuff. So you get out of the cult and you start reading about this. I mean, what was that like for you, kind of being opened up to this alternative world essentially?
It was super exciting. And the more I found out about witchcraft and paganism, the more I found like it's the exact opposite to how it was painted for me growing up. Like it's all about just like living in harmony with nature and like honoring nature's cycles and your body cycles and not harming anyone. It's like just very beautiful and very full of love and full of light. So I was very excited learning about it and just very, very drawn in, very drawn to it. And then I started to think to myself, like at that point, during the beginning of college, I still considered myself a Christian, but I was reading about witchcraft and like feeling very drawn to it. And it was resonating. And I was like, oh, I think I might be a witch. Like this is directly in alignment with everything that I believe and practice and do naturally. So at first I would like call myself a Christian witch because I was like too scared to say I wasn't a Christian. But by the end of college, I knew I wasn't a Christian. I knew I didn't believe it. And I would have said then, yeah, like I'm definitely not a Christian. Like I was scared to say it out loud, but I did say it finally.
Wow. That's so going to a Christian college, a Bible college, where realistically women are just supposed to go to Bible college so they can find a husband. Right? That's the whole point. It's not really
much.
An education. It's just kind of like find your man, the old MRS degree. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Instead of doing all that, you're essentially discovering this whole new, I don't even want to call it a religion because it's not really a religion, but this new world that is diametrically opposed to what you grew up with. I mean, that must have been, well, I said, you know, you said you started reading about it when you were 18 and then finally were comfortable saying after, I'm assuming 4 years of college, that you weren't a Christian anymore. So this was like a really long drawn out process for you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it definitely took a while. Very slow process because it's really scary. Like even just saying like, oh my God, I was scared because I was like, I just swore. I took the Lord's name in vain. Like, am I going to get in trouble? Like is something really bad going to happen? Like I was very paranoid for a really long time.
Did you have people that you could talk to about it at that time? Like, just kind of what you were reading about and learning about and how you were feeling? Or is this just, did you just have to keep this all bottled up inside?
I don't remember really having anybody to talk to. No. So it was pretty much all inside. And I knew that I would be in huge trouble if my parents ever found out, if they found the books, even though I was legally an adult at that time.
Right.
So I had to be very careful.
Pull you back home, quit paying for school, right?
Yeah.
Lock you away, probably pray the witch away.
They would definitely sit me down and I would be in trouble. I would be shamed. Like I knew it would be a really bad experience. So I just tried to be as careful as I could be.
And this whole time you said you met your boyfriend in college. So did he know what was going on? Was he aware of the pagan and witchcraft studies?
He was aware to some extent. I shared a little bit with him. He knew that I was like reading these books and like exploring it, and he would try to like counter some of the things I was saying, like, well, this is why it's not right. And I think, he was kind of trying to encourage me to stay on that Christian path. So he knew some, but I hid a lot from him because, I didn't feel comfortable sharing all of it with him at the time.
I mean, witches are, I would think, pretty hard to control. And so it would be or would have been in his best interest to keep you as far away from that as possible if he was going to be a truly godly man and, you know, bring his wife into submission, you know?
Yeah. And he was pretty progressive at the time. But even now, like years later, we're still friends. He's still religious, but he's very progressive at this point.
Oh, well, that's good. Good for him. You said y'all dated for 10 years and at one point were engaged?
Almost a decade. Yeah. We were together 8 years. We were engaged. And then, we just grew apart. That just didn't work out. So, after that, I think I just dated a little bit casually. And then it was towards the end of my 20s. I actually dated the first female bodied person that I had ever been with. And that was a whole experience in and of itself, because dating that person is what helped me realize that I'm actually gay and not straight. Like, I went my whole life thinking I was super, super duper straight, only to find out after kissing one girl that, nope, I am very, very gay.
Oh, wow. All I can hear in my head right now is the Katy Perry song. This is crazy. Yeah. Okay. Let me back up for a second. Okay. So you met your boyfriend in college. I'm assuming y'all dated throughout college, and then you dated another 4 years after college before you eventually broke up. I mean, about like what year did y'all break up? When did that occur?
At this point, let's see, probably like at this point, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I think.
Oh, so I mean, that's not recent, but that's more recent than I thought it would be. Wow.
Yeah, because I was single for a little bit after him, then met that person. And then I was together with that female bodied person for a couple years before we broke up.
Okay. So what happened in, the 4 years after college where you wind up, kind of completely, I don't want to say reimagining, that's the wrong word, but, experiencing this revelation that, I'm not actually a heterosexual woman. what happened in that period of time?
I think my mind just progressively kept getting more and more open. Like I said, I thought I was super straight, but I did know, like, deep down, if I met a girl and fell in love with her, like, I wouldn't not pursue it. I wouldn't not go after something like that just because of the genitals that she happens to be born with. I didn't ever think that would actually happen. I was like, I don't think girls would do it for me. I've never been into girls like that. I literally don't even have any interest in experimenting with girls, like nothing. I really felt super, super straight. But I knew I was like open-minded enough to the point that if I fell in love with someone, like regardless of what they looked like, who they were, like how they identified, I would be open to that. And then lo and behold, that is what happened. I met someone and they were interested in me first. We were actually only friends for about 9 months. I met them at work when I was actually dancing as an exotic dancer. And then, like I said, we were just friends.
Oh my God. I feel like I need to, I got to get more context here. This is crazy. Okay. Let me make one point. Growing up in the shiny, happy people cult, there was no room for anything gay, right? That was a sin, period, end of sentence. If you had those kinds of thoughts, because as we know, this is the way people are born. They don't have a choice in the matter. You're just born a certain way. If you were born with those types of thoughts where you're attracted to the same sex, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. It's not necessarily a sin for you to be born that way, but you can never explore those feelings, right? You just have to deny who you are. And that's how you remain in God's favor, right?
Yeah.
That's what we grew up. believing that's what we were taught. I mean, a lot of people that I still know in fundamental religious circles still believe that way to this day.
Absolutely.
And so I'm assuming you were raised that way, right?
Yeah, it was all about, you know, if you feel that way, repress it, deny mm-hmm. it, pray it away, marry mm-hmm. a man or marry someone of the opposite gender and live your life as a straight person. Or if you can't do that, just be single, be alone right. and sad for the rest of your life.
That's right.
Which is disgusting yeah. to me. Like, that's so cruel.
Well, and people wonder why some of these relationships implode. And people get married and then one of them comes out of the closet and everyone's just absolutely shocked. Like, what? You know, well, why did you get married if you were gay? Well, it's because we beat them into submission and indoctrinated yeah. them with this idea, brainwashed them into believing that this is my only option. If I don't want to be alone, I just have to suffer through a heterosexual relationship.
It
blows me away. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah. At this point, like, to me, it would feel super unnatural to be with a man. It would feel like low key traumatic. So I can't even imagine other people in that situation. Like, that's disgusting and cruel to do that to someone when they just yeah. want to love. Like, love is a beautiful thing. God is love. Right. Like, let people just love. It's not that deep.
I would 100% agree with you on that. Okay, so you realized that you were gay, but you also mentioned that you started dancing at a spicy club, let's call it. The only job I heard you talk about was that you were a librarian. So how did you go from being a librarian to a spicy dancer? What was that? I mean, what was that evolution like?
I honestly didn't think I was going to be able to do it. I knew the money was really good. And just the fact that it was at the time, like, so taboo was very alluring to me. So one of my friends mm-hmm. was a dancer and she was like, oh, I'll help you. I'll teach you a few basic moves. You can borrow an outfit. I'll take you to my club. You can audition. They'll hire you on the spot. Like, she was very like convinced that.
You got a mentor. She was yeah. a mentor dancer.
Yeah, pretty
That's
much.
So cute. I love that.
Yeah, because otherwise I think I would have been too scared to do it on my own. So I went along. I was like, okay, I'll try to do this, but I honestly didn't think I would be able to do it. I thought I would get up on stage for my first set and have to take my top off. And I thought, I'm going to chicken out. I'm not going to be able to do it. And it'll probably just be like a one and done. Like, one night I try it, not successful, and I go home and never do it again. But I was able to do it, and I actually found that I really, really enjoyed it. I really loved it. The money didn't hurt either, because I was definitely struggling financially, so it really saved my life in some ways. Having grown up the way I did, being taught that our bodies are so sinful and that we have to cover them up and hide, essentially, so that we don't cause men to stumble. But just being in that environment where it was so celebrated and it felt so empowering, I guess, to do that. I felt like I was in control of it. I could assert my boundaries. And yeah, it was just very, very empowering to do something like that and experience my body in that way that I'd never been able to before, if that makes sense.
Oh, that makes total sense. You know, for me, obviously, can't really relate to your specific experience. And I will say, I know from my own experience, from the hundreds of stories that I've heard about growing up in the shiny, happy people cult, it was a exponentially worse experience for women. Just the abuse, the trauma, what y'all went through as women in the cult, it's unconscionable. And so growing up that way with those expectations in that kind of environment, and then going to this, where all the things that you're feeling and reading about and maybe even exploring a little bit in your private life, all of this is celebrated in the environment that you're in as an exotic dancer. I mean, that's just got to be that's just got to blow your whole world open pretty much.
Yeah, it was an entirely different reality that I had never knew existed or been a part of, obviously. So yeah, it was definitely very different, very exciting. I felt very at home in that environment. And to this day, like, the club is one of the few places that I really do feel like very at home and very comfortable in.
You know what, Sam? I'm the same.
Yeah.
It is my safe space.
Yes.
Well, I mean, was it difficult to get used to at all? I mean, obviously, you know, guys are going in there with one intention, right? I mean, was that kind of attention and engagement, like, was that difficult for you coming from this very isolated, repressed environment, or were you just immediately embracing it?
I immediately embraced it. I mean, naturally, I am shy and introverted, and I don't like being the center of attention. So even now, after doing it for quite some time, sometimes I will get a little shy, especially like up on stage when I know like there's all these eyes on me. But the excitement and the love that I have for it far, far outweighs that. You know, it's like a little bit of stage fright, but that's okay. You know, it's so exciting. Like, there are nights I walk around the club just thinking about my upbringing and how far I've come and how this is so, so different than how I grew up and so different from where I thought I would be. And it just kind of blows my mind. But also, I'm really happy that it turned out this way. And I feel really proud of myself for coming this far and being able to do something like that.
Yeah, that is so cool. I mean, you're in Vegas, as we've talked about previously. Y'all just had the Super Bowl in Las Vegas. So I can only imagine what that was like at the Spicy Clubs while the Super Bowl was happening. I mean, was that just insane?
Super insane, but so fun. Yeah.
And really?
Like getting to see people like you never thought you would see in real life. Like, it's trippy and it's really fun. So it's just a fun experience. It just makes being alive a little more interesting, I feel like.
Can you tell me about some of the people that you ran into while the Super Bowl was happening? Is that private information?
I don't think it's private information. I wasn't in that particular room. Because we have all the celebrities in this back room. I've gone in that room before, but generally you don't make a lot of money. It's kind of a waste of time. Like, if you want to like have the experience and like be around these people and see them like up close, of course. But for me, I was like more like, I have bills. I'm like trying to hit this next financial goal. So I was on the actual floor, like trying to make money. Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Tyga? Rack City. Okay. Yeah. Absolute legend. Maybe a little bit problematic too. Didn't he date Kylie Jenner when she was underage or something weird like that?
Yeah, they dated. They have a kid together. I don't think they're still together. They were playing all his stuff. Yeah.
That's so interesting. I'm going to divert for a second here, Oceana. It's so interesting that you mentioned a private room. And I feel like this is probably pretty common at a lot of the clubs in Las Vegas. But one of the times that I was in Vegas, and this is when I was still playing in rock bands and had really long hair and had a very serious substance abuse problem. I think someone thought that I was a person that I was not while I was in Las Vegas, because we went to a very specific spicy club. We were picked up in a private car. We were taken around behind like the back of the club and taken through a private entrance. And I was specifically told there are no metal detectors for this entrance, which I thought was a weird thing to say. But yeah, we were in like this back private room. There was no one else. It was just me and two of my buddies. And we spent like several hours there. We actually did spend quite a bit of money. So
it's hard
maybe
not
that's
to.
Because we're not celebrities though.
Yeah, the celebrities are really cheap, so it's really a waste of time.
Oh, that's a shame. I wanted to talk about kind of your coming out, I guess, or your realization that you don't. So you're dating women now. Are you still attracted to men, or I mean, are you just all the way full blown?
All the way full blown lesbian. I'm not attracted to men. just could not see myself with them. When I was with men, I was always frustrated because I always felt like there was always a limit to how far we could go spiritually. Whereas with women, it feels like I could go all the way. And like the bonding feels different. It feels so much like deeper and closer. Yeah, it's like a very spiritual experience too.
That's so interesting. Maybe it's, you know, that masculine energy just wasn't doing it for you.
You I don't know, because I'm attracted to masculine, like more butch lesbians too. The first person I dated was very, very, very masculine. So I'm like, I'm attracted to both. Yeah. So I don't know if it's the masculine energy. I don't know. Yeah.
That's so interesting. So, I mean, you are obviously not butch.
Yeah.
but you are attracted to the more masculine type of women.
Well, both masculine and feminine. Like the girl I'm dating right now, she's kind of in the middle. Like she probably leans more towards femme, but she's not like super femme by any means. But yeah, attracted to all different kinds of women. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, and you know, that's that makes sense too, because I mean, I've dated some very tomboyish women. A lot of people would just call that masculine. And I've dated some girly girls that, you know, favorite color was pink and small dogs and all that fun stuff. Right. And so it makes sense that, you know, that even that could be a spectrum of attraction. Right.
Yeah, definitely. You just love who you love.
That's exactly right. I mean, me personally, I am super duper straight. I can certainly appreciate a very handsome man like, you know, Brad Pitt.
Same.
I thought he was the most beautiful person in the world after I saw him in Legends in the Fall. Now it's you know, Matt Rife, I think, is just, wow, what a dude. Incredible.
He's a beautiful man. Yeah.
He really is. But not attracted to them in that way. And neither are you, as a matter of fact. So even guys that you find super attractive, still just not attracted to them in like a romantic way anymore.
No. And if I think about like being with a man, like in a more intimate way, like it feels icky to me. I'm just like, ooh, that feels icky and unnatural and weird. Like, yeah, no.
Even though you were with a dude for 8 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I really did think I was straight, but it was funny because during that time, like during my whole life, I would always say like, oh, I wish I was a lesbian. I wish I could like girls, but like, they just don't do it for me, even though I'd never even experimented with a girl. So it's like, well, how do you know?
You just convinced yourself, right?
I guess. Like maybe I was trying to fit some mold I thought I was supposed to. I don't know. Who knows?
But. Well, until you had that first kiss.
Yeah.
Your first lesbian experience, that was it for you.
Yeah. I was like, holy. I don't want to like swear in here, like anything, get your video flagged or anything. But yeah, I was just like, oh, I'm actually really, really gay. I was like, this is what it's supposed to feel like. This is how it's supposed to be. Like, it all just kind of clicked. And I was like, okay.
Not surprising, though. Really not surprising. Coming from the environment of repression that you grew up in, it doesn't surprise me at all, quite frankly, that it was literally like flipping a switch for you. It makes a lot of sense.
And it kind of, I feel that's the one thing that I wish if I could go back, I wish I hadn't been so repressed in that sense, because I think I would have realized things and came out sooner. But I mean, everything happens for a reason. So I'm just happy to be where I'm at now.
Did you have chemistry with your boyfriend that you dated for 8 years? I mean, was there a closeness and intimacy there?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I loved him like with all my heart. And I mean, we're still friends to this day because I still care about him and love him as a friend. Like I consider him family.
Wow. Did he move on? Did he turn gay or is he still straight?
No, he's super straight.
He's super duper straight. Okay, cool.
Yes.
Well, hopefully he found someone that actually prefers his gender, number one.
Yeah.
Well, that's so interesting to me. Just spending all that time in a relationship that you thought was fulfilling and was what you needed to realizing years later, oh, that wasn't it for me at all. Not even remotely.
Yeah. Yeah. Very crazy how my life has gone definitely did not see this for me at all, but
that's so cool to me. So working as a spicy dancer, I know that y'all have just some of the craziest experiences with customers. And I'm assuming you have at least one or two really juicy stories. Can you tell me about, you know, any of the just really bizarre or weird encounters or requests that you've gotten from customers?
I feel like the requests I've gotten so far have been pretty tame. Men have wanted to suck on my toes. So I'm like, well, if you tip me extra, of course you can suck on my little toes. But I feel like that's very normal, like very normal stuff.
How much do you charge for a toe suck, Oceana?
Usually I make them tip at least 100 extra. Like if they're going to do any type of like sucking, it's like minimum 100 because that's gross. Like I don't enjoy that. So
I think you're shortchanging yourself. I think you could get at least 1,000. For that, based on, you know, other conversations that I've had.
Well, true, because the most I ever made, I don't know, am I allowed to say this? Or?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, but the most I ever made was about 10,000 just to have a guy lick the insides of my ears. So, like, I probably am shortchanging myself a little bit.
You got $10,000 for a guy to stick his tongue in your ear.
Yeah, over the course of 2 days, we hung out both evenings. We went out, I think it was like dinner. I don't think we went to a show with this guy. But yeah, he just wanted to like lick my ears, lick the insides of my ears. I was like,
and nothing else?
I'm down. Nothing else. Nothing at all. He was one of my best clients ever. Very respectful.
I feel like I've got great ears. and I need to find a lady or a man. I don't care if it's 10 grand just to lick the inside of my ear. Whatever. Yeah,
it's worth it.
Yeah. If you want to watch your dog lick the insides of my ear for $10,000, I'll do it. I'm in.
Right?
Absolutely. That is wild. $10,000.
Yeah. It's crazy what people will pay. Yeah.
I mean, did he have a gross tongue? Like, was he?
No, was he drooling in there? Gross at all. No, he was fine. Like, I really enjoyed my time with him. Yeah, he was very nice, very kind, very respectful. Yeah.
Mm. Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Like, to this day, I have nothing but good things to say about him.
Wow. That is just crazy to me. I mean, I can't even imagine. Well, I mean, this guy probably has, like, just ungodly amounts of money that I could never imagine anyway. But even if I had a whole bunch of money, I just can't imagine giving someone $10,000 to lick the inside of their ear. It's just wild to me.
He was very generous. I was very grateful for him.
What a sweetheart he was, you know? Well, that's, I don't really think it can get much crazier than that. So how is your recovery process now, Oceana? I mean, you're all these years removed from the cult. You've discovered yourself in so many different ways. I mean, how is it now that you're on the other side?
I just feel like an overwhelming sense of gratitude and happiness that I'm on the other side. My life's not perfect by any means. I still have, you know, mental health struggles, of course. But I've been through a lot of therapy. I'm going to be going back into therapy again soon. Once I find someone specialized, in like cults and trauma, just because I can tell I need it. And I definitely recommend therapy for anybody else coming out of this type of experience. A lot of self-help through like just watching different things on like YouTube, reading books. I mean, your channel, for example, was one of the channels I found that brought a lot of healing, just listening to your story and other guests. A lot of meditation, a lot of time spent in nature and just kind of creating my own life and living it to the fullest, as fully as I possibly can, pursuing all the things that I always wanted to, but never could. Just trying to really create community and chosen family, just because I don't really have that with my own actual family. We still talk and everything. It's not like they outright shunned me, but definitely I'm very ostracized. So just trying to build community has been really helpful. And that's kind of what I'm still in the process of doing.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to ask you how the relationship with your family was. And it sounds like while they don't necessarily disavow you, they probably just don't approve of the lifestyle and prefer to avoid it, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. They won't really talk about certain things with me, like my sexuality or my partner's. They're very, very awkward and very weird around that. And we'll always just call it my friend instead of my girlfriend.
Yeah.
So
just denial on their part, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. But
well, just wait until all your other sisters come out as gay and then they're going to have to accept
exactly.
it, you know?
Right.
That's, you know, once again, every family is a little bit different. Everyone's experience in the shiny, happy people cult is different. And so, you know, obviously I would love to see a scenario where every single person that grew up this way had the opportunity to have a healed relationship with their family. But, it unfortunately just doesn't always happen that way. I mean, are your siblings a little more accepting, or are they kind of the same way as your parents?
Some of them are. All of my siblings, aside from my younger sister, are all still very religious and, as far as I know, pretty conservative still. So yeah, my little sister and I are kind of, we kind of feel like the black sheep of the family. We never feel like quite fully accepted or included. And I don't know if that will ever change. I've tried a couple times now to repair the relationship with my parents. And at this point, I'm not sure that will happen. So everything is very superficial. We're nice to each other, but it's very superficial. There's a lot of like passive aggressiveness. And I'm just trying to move on with my life in a way that feels healthy and fulfilling.
Well, that's good. I mean, sometimes you have to realize when you're wasting energy on something or someone. And that's kind of what it sounds like, is that, you know, you can maintain a superficial relationship, like you said, with the pleasantries, and anything much deeper than that isn't isn't going to happen. And so why waste energy on trying to create something that just isn't going to be there?
Exactly. You
know, it's to me, in a situation like how you grew up, how I grew up, how so many other people grew up, this should really be the parents that put their kids through this, reaching out, trying to repair, trying to build back. And so many times it ends up being the responsibility of the kid, or at least the kids feeling like it's their responsibility to repair that relationship. And I just think that's so fucked up and backwards, quite honestly.
It really is. Yeah. And that's been one of the hardest things to deal with, is like, why do I have to be the bigger person? Like, if I was fine with it, I was like, if this is what fixes it, I'll be the bigger person. But to have to be the bigger person and to have nothing come of it is very devastating.
Oh yeah. It's heartbreaking. It's just reopening all these wounds and re-traumatizing, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but it sounds like you have a very fulfilling life on your own. It sounds like all of your dreams are coming true, and that's just so cool. I'm so happy for you that you've managed to work through a lot of this trauma. I mean, it's a lifelong experience, right? But you've gotten over the worst of it, and you're in a place where you feel happy and healthy. That's so cool.
Yeah. So I'm happy to be on this side of it, and I'm excited to see where life goes. And if my life can be this drastically different, I'm like, what is it going to be like in 10 years? Like, I can't even imagine.
Right. I mean, it just keeps getting better for me. So I'm sure it'll be the same experience for you. What, I did have a quick question about the witchcraft stuff.
Okay.
I've always been curious about spells and like what kind of spells y'all are doing. Is that like witch only information, or can muggles know about it too? Like, what kind of spells are you doing?
I mean, I think it depends on the witch. Like, we're all doing different spells. Me personally, I mean, I will do things as I feel called to do them, if that makes sense. And I always do it for myself. Like, you can't be doing spell. I don't believe that it's ethical to be doing spells on other people, or, for example, like to get someone to do something, or like to get someone to like fall in love with you. I don't think that's ethical. I don't really dabble with like the hexing and that kind of stuff. It's more just like to better my own life, or like a lot of rituals to like celebrate, for instance, like the new moon, the full moon, things like that.
Oh, crystals and stuff, right? Moon water?
Yeah, of course. Always.
Absolutely. I know a lot of people that practice witchcraft then. Most of my ex-girlfriends, as a matter of fact.
Very common now. Yeah.
So you're not doing black magic necessarily.
No. I don't dare. Because just from a purely selfish point of view, that's going to come back on me. So no, thank you. My life is hard enough. I don't need to deal with that.
Oh, man. I was hoping to hear about some witch's brew or a love potion or, putting a spell on a guy to give you a bunch of money at the club or something like that. But I mean, it sounds like you're getting plenty of money anyway without the spells. So whatever is working.
I will say that right before I did meet the first female bodied person that I ever dated, I did craft this little magical brew, and I did a yoni steam, if you know what that is. And then they came into my life literally a month later. Yoni, it's another word for, I don't know what all I can say in here, but for your lady bits. It's basically steaming your lady bits with all these herbs and flowers in it. Yeah.
Wow.
Came into my life. So I was interesting.
It's
And I did that with a very specific intention too. So I'm that's very interesting. Yeah.
That is very, maybe I need to do a yoni on myself. I don't know. I don't know which part of my bits I should steam, honestly.
So
I wonder if you steam the wrong hole, end up, yikes. I'm going to have to look
you
into
never
that.
Know what maybe you might you be summoning. Some pointers.
I am afraid of anything to do with witchcraft, even all these years removed from the cult. And it's not because I'm afraid of letting a demon into my life or something like that. I'm just afraid that, I'm just afraid that I'm going to end up with the crazy lady. That's really my biggest concern.
The crazy lady.
Yeah. I don't have I haven't had a lot of success in that department, Oceana. Most of my relationships, have ended in pretty spectacular fashion for lack of a better term.
Sounds intense.
So yeah. And they've all been into crystals for the most part. So I don't really,
Gotta stay away from us, I guess.
I'm like I said, not afraid of the demons, just afraid of, the zodiacs, crystals. I guess. I don't know.
That'll do it.
Well, I know people are going to want to look you up, potentially even reach out to you. Can you share your social media or where you would like to be contacted, Oceana?
Yeah. So you can find me on YouTube. It's just my name, Oceana333. My TikTok is Anna.Oceana. And then my Instagram is witchybish, which is B-I-S-H. And I think it's 3 H's and then an underscore.
Oh, and I will absolutely put that on the screen so it'll pop up. Everyone can find you, no problem. Y'all, please go check out Oceana's content. You have done some cult content on your own, and it's very good. I've watched it. Really, really cool. Some very emotional videos as well, but all really good stuff. So y'all go follow Oceana, check out her stuff. I really appreciate you sharing all of this with me. You've been incredibly open about your journey. And I know there are other people out there that have either had a similar experience or are currently having a similar experience, especially just realizing things about themselves that they never could have imagined while they were still growing up in their own high control group or, fundamental religious institution. So I just appreciate your honesty here, your willingness to share, Oceana. It's absolutely an inspiration. Incredibly proud as someone who's been through this. I just want to congratulate you on how you've been able to rise above all of it and become your own person and live your truth. It's just so cool.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me and giving me this opportunity to share my story.
Y'all, thank you so much for watching. Please like, comment, and subscribe. We will see you next Wednesday. We love you. Bye.